After having completed the general lien and the particular lien, now we are moving to a next important right of a banker, which is a right of set off. When the customer keeps two or more accounts at the bank, some of which are overdrawn and some are in credit. So one is deficit of any balance and one is having a credit balance, that means excess balance, in which case the bank has a right to combine such accounts and pay the resultant balance, if any, upon a demand being made by the customer. This is what is a right of set off. So in general lien, the banker has a right to retain, whereas in case of a set off, the bank can combine two or more accounts, combine the debit and credit balance, and if at all any proceeds sweep in, then it can pay back to the customer on his demand. The right to combine the account is only with the banker and not with the customer. And so a customer cannot expect his check on one account to be paid by combining the balance of all the accounts. This is a special right of the banker. The customer won't have it. If he has issued a check of a particular account, then he has to keep a balance for that particular account. He cannot presume that a banker will use the balance of another account for paying a check from another account. Specific instructions are required for making any debit to an account, and the specific instructions has to be backed by important documents such as checks or withdrawal slips. When certain securities, example shares, debentures, etc., are in the hands of the banker, what type of right does a banker have? Please note, banker have in possession securities, which does not mean balances. So when there are securities in the form of shares, debentures, etc., in the hands of a banker, then the banker have a right of lien and not set off. How can he set off securities? Not possible. He can set off balances between the accounts that are maintained with the bank. A banker can exercise right of set off provided it follows certain conditions. And what are the conditions to follow by the banker for exercising the right of set off? Number one, the amount of the debt must be certain. You cannot say contingent, future debts, no, existing and certain debts. The debt must be due and payable. No, no, the installments are payable at a future date. You cannot set off. The debt must be due and payable immediately. The account must be between the same parties and in the same right. You cannot appropriate or set off a joint account balance with a single account balance. The debt due must be immediate and not a future debt. Immediate payment is necessary, not your future payments, likely payments, not possible. You cannot set off future payments or likely payments with your current securities. Liability should not be contingent, that is liability based on certain incidents, certain events happening. You cannot use that for exercising your right of set off. There should be no agreement to the contrary. Whenever any deposits is made, like deposit in the safe custody, you cannot use it for exercising the right of lien. That is specifically for safe custody purpose. The banker may exercise his right at his discretion. It's not necessary, mandatory. If the banker feels he has to, he will be able to do that. The banker has right to exercise his right before a garnishee order is made effective. So this is where we have seen the garnishee order issued in order nisi and order absolute. So at the order nisi state, he has to convince the court that so and so general lien will be exercised, so and so set off will be exercised, and the remaining balance will be applicable for the garnishee order. The right to set off all accounts arises immediately in the following instances. What are they? Number one, on the death mental incapacity or insolvency of a customer. So whenever such incidents happen, death, mental incapacity or insolvency of a customer, then the right of set off all our accounts arises immediately. On the insolvency of a firm or on the liquidation of the company. So the first point is more related with individual customers. The second point is more related with a firm or a company. On receiving a garnishee order, immediate set off, otherwise the balance will go away. On receiving notice of assignment of a customer's credit balance, notice of assignments received from insurance companies, from regulatory authorities, you have to set off. On receiving notice of a second mortgage or security charge to the bank. So whenever second mortgage is there, the primary mortgage may stand diluted. So on our receiving such second mortgage notice, right to set off all our accounts arises immediately. Now we move on to the rights of a collecting banker. There is a special law which provides the rights of a collecting banker, and that is section 131 of the Negotiable Instruments Act, which provides that a banker who has in good faith and without negligence received payment for a customer of a check crossed generally or specially to himself shall not, in case the title to the check proves defective, incur any liability to the true owner of the check by reason only of having received such payment. So the banker will get the protection under section 131 of the Negotiable Instruments Act, provided such an act has been done in good faith and without negligence for receiving the payment on behalf of his customer. So this is a very important right of a collecting banker, specifically provided by section 131 of the Negotiable Instruments Act. A collecting banker is protected under section 131 Negotiable Instruments Act. The previous slide has been broken down into important points. The number one requirement is the collecting bank acts in good faith and without negligence. The collecting bank receives payment of check for a customer, so it has to be for a customer and not for anybody else. The check is crossed, that check has to be crossed, that means it has to be an account pay check to be deposited in the customer's accounts only, and the crossing was made before the check got into the hands of the collecting bank. So it's the real intention of the drawer who has issued such check to the customer. The collecting bank acts only to receive the payment. So this is one of the basic obligation of the banker towards its customer, and once the obligation of the banker is done in good faith and without negligence, the banker has a right to claim a protection under section 131 of the Negotiable Instruments Act in the capacity of a collecting banker. When does a negligence happen? We have seen in the previous slide in good faith and without negligence. Now in this slide we are going to see when does a negligence happen on the part of a banker. Negligence occurs when there is no requirement to take care. So negligence occurs when there is a requirement, not no requirement. So whenever there is a requirement to take care and the banker does not take care, like whenever an account has to be opened, if the banker does not take care to collect the information, the mandatory information as per the KYC guidelines, that means it is allowing any customer, any fraudulent customer to open an account, and because of which he deposits checks, four checks not belonging to him, then that is a clear sign of negligence, because the banker has not done the required things as expected of him and that can amount to be a serious negligence. The banker has to look after the interest of the true owner of a check, otherwise he would be held negligent. He has to act as a reasonable person and take such care with regards to a check paid in by the customer as a reasonable man would do, and provide competent staff to carry out this task. As we have seen in the previous chapter, the obligation of the bank, a bank is liable for its employees' misact also. You cannot say my employee has done it. Whatever acts are done by its employee, finally the main liability comes from the banker, and hence the banker should have competent staff. Otherwise, the banker will be held negligent in spite of an act being done by its employees. The burden is on the bank to prove that it collected the check in good faith and without negligence. If the banker has done an act in good faith and without negligence, it has to give evidence that under so and so scenario and so and so circumstances, he had no other means to believe what he did was wrong. So if he is able to convince, then the banker can claim the protection, he won't be held negligent. And hence the burden of proof will be on the banker to prove that whatever act he has done for collection has been done in good faith and without negligence. Here there is a very important note which says that if what appeared on the face of the check seemed suspicious, or the circumstances surrounding the deposit of the check have aroused suspicion, it can be a terrorist money or something like that, an adequate inquiry had not been made, it would be held that the bank was negligent. So prima facie you see something suspicious on the check, prima facie under the circumstances it was collected, from where it is coming, you find something suspicious, and in spite of that, if you don't make adequate inquiries about the instrument, about the source from where it is coming and why it is coming, a banker has to do that in case of suspicious transactions or suspicious collections. And if the banker fails to do that, then it can be accounted as a negligent act. The banker will be booked for negligence. In State Bank of India versus Gulab Basha, it was held that the bank was negligent as the bank failed to notice that the normal endorsement for payment to the endorser was not on the check, and the protective endorsement was also more than the amount stated on the check. The banker should have taken a note, how can the endorsement be more than the amount on the check? And hence, the bank was negligent as the bank failed to take notice of such serious irregularities on the check itself. Negligence need not be only in the collection of checks. Failure to make inquiries at the time of account opening can bar the bank from seeking protection, and nowadays there are strict KYC guidelines. You have to obtain proof of identity, you have to obtain proof of address, you cannot accept a customer without making proper inquiry, without checking the negative list provided by the United Nations Security Council. Again, the documents that are submitted has to be only those that have been prescribed by the Reserve Bank of India. You cannot accept any other document besides that. That may be faulty documents, may not carry that weight as the proper documents have. And in spite of that, if you open an account by taking improper documents or failing to obtain certain documents which are mandatory as per the KYC guidelines, then you as a bank will be held negligent, and failure to make inquiries at the time of account opening can bar the bank from seeking protection and the negligent tag will definitely be put on the banker. But how far should the bank go for making such inquiries? Should the bank hire some top detective to go into each and every details of the customer? Let's see this. One of a leading case judgment was talking something like this. What it said? No doubt the banker should not play the role of a master detective. Banker is simply doing a trust based banking relationship. You are not expected to be a master detective. And subject a prospective customer to a grueling examination like police officers doing investigation. And what such grueling examination they are talking about? The grueling examination is about the status, the credit worthiness, the business experience, etc., etc., about a customer. And when such things happen, before opening of the account, not expected. A banker need not be a master detective. It need not have a grueling examination about a customer. Tell me everything. No, that is not required. Then what is required? But even so, when a person wants to open an account for the first time, that first time contact is very important. Whenever any stranger wants to establish a relationship, wants to enter into a contract for doing banking transactions with a banker has to be careful, not extra careful. And what does that mean? The banker is expected to make more inquiries than usual to test the credentials of the prospective customers before permitting him to open an account. He cannot just take it for granted. At least some sort of inquiries based on the background, based on the documents submitted by the customer, and based on the experience he has gained by handling so many customers over a period of time, a banker has to make certain inquiries and record such inquiries along with the documentation which establishes that the act was done in good faith and without negligence. And if later anything happens, the banker can always say that he was not negligent while opening an account. In Bharat Bank versus Kishanchand Chelaram, it was held that the question of whether a bank acted negligently would be relevant only if the account opening and the account was opened with the check in question, or when the check was put into the account shortly after the account was opened. Syndicate Bank versus Jayashree Industries. The bank draft was collected by the bank for an account that had been opened a month earlier in the name of XL Conductor Industries Limited, at the request of a person posing as a proprietor. The bank treated the account as that of a proprietary concern and not a limited company, and permitted cash withdrawals by the so-called proprietor. He later obtained a sizable draft in the name of the company, and after it was collected, withdrew the proceeds. The collecting bank was held negligent in this case for opening an account without a proper inquiry and without making due inquiry. Whenever anybody is posing something, unless there are solid documents to get convinced, it becomes a prime duty of a banker to make at least some proper inquiries. Otherwise, he won't get the right of protections that are available under various regulations. In Ladbroke and Company versus Todd, a thief had opened an account with a stolen check, stating that he was the payee. He was not introduced to the bank. Now, this is a serious defect, a serious negligence on the part of the bank to open an account without getting proper reference or introduction. And no references were obtained. So, this is a height of negligence. The check was, at the request of the thief, cleared specifically the next day and he withdrew the proceeds. Now, it doesn't take any rocket science to conclude that a bank was highly negligent. It was held that the bank was negligent in not taking reasonable precautions to safeguard the true owner of the check. At least some inquiries, some introduction, some references would have brought to light the theft of such a person. Lloyd's Bank versus E.B. Savory. The court held that if the banker receives payment of a check to which the customer has no title, the onus is on the bank to disprove negligence. So, finally, here again the burden of proof lies on the banker to disprove the negligence. What amounts to negligence is, however, a question of fact in each case. Each and every case will have different facts. So, the question of facts will be useful for deciding the negligence. Negligence means want of reasonable care. It will differ from case to case with reference to the interest of the true owner. The test of negligence is whether the transaction of paying in any given check, coupled with the circumstances, antecedent and the present, so flagrantly out of the ordinary course that it ought to have aroused suspicion in the mind of the banker and caused him to make inquiry. So, this is a beautiful definition of the test of negligence provided by this case law. In Syndicate Bank versus United Commercial Bank, it was held that the bank which had collected a materially altered check could not claim protection under 131. It's a serious forgery. You cannot get protection for a forged check, as it failed to prove that the customer had been properly introduced. So, first of all, there is a forgery, and second, the biggest negligence was customer was not introduced properly and that the account had been opened after making related inquiries. So, additional factor was no related inquiries were made in addition to not taking proper introduction. So, it was a serious negligence on the part of the banker, and hence the banker was booked for negligence. There is no test to determine the negligence. Sir John Paget says, a famous authority on banking, he says, it would be futile to try and formulate particular conditions or circumstances which might or might not establish negligence, because the entire conclusion has to be made on the facts of the case, and different cases will have different facts. So, the facts have to be studied minutely, then only the conclusion whether there is a negligence or no negligence can be arrived at. Lord Dunedin had said, the test of negligence is whether the transaction of paying in any given check coupled with the circumstances antecedent and present were so out of the ordinary course that it ought to have aroused doubt in the banker's mind and cause them to make inquiry. So by default, by custom, by habit, a banker should have got the doubt on the basis of his experience. In spite of that, the banker had got no arousal. He did not take any care. He would be definitely booked for negligence. What happens in case of losing of check? The Delhi Consumer Commission had ruled that unless and until there is unauthorized encashment of misplaced check by any third person due to the negligence of the bank, it cannot be directed to pay the amount of the check which the party is entitled to receive from the third party. Let's see this once again. The Delhi Consumer Commission, that is the state level consumer commission, had ruled that unless and until, number one condition, there is unauthorized encashment of misplaced check. So misplaced means a lost check also, by any third person due to the negligence of a bank. So number one, it is unauthorized encashment helped by the negligence of bank. It cannot be directed to pay the bank. So if it is a negligence on the part of the bank, then definitely the banker would be liable to pay or make good the loss which the party is entitled to receive from the third party. At the most, the bank will be held liable to pay compensation for the negligence in misplacing the check. But if the bank has not contributed, bank was not negligent towards the payment of the check, then the banker may not be held liable. But at the same time, it can be booked for giving the compensation for misplacing the check. Right to charge interest. The banker has a right to charge interest on advances granted to a customer. This right comes directly from the loan agreement. This interest is charged monthly on the amount due, again on the terms and conditions of the loan agreement. Another right for the banker is right to charge incidental charges. Whenever you are taking any service, the banker are displaying the charges. You are signing off the schedule of charges, the tariff chart is displayed in the bank, in the website, or told to you on inquiry. So a customer is bound to pay any such incidental charges. As long as the relationship of a banker and customer exists, the banker has a right to claim incidental charges from its customers. In India, bankers charges a nominal amount. This is based on the average daily balance of the customer, if it has not maintained for a particular period, and so many other charges nowadays introduced for using of extra checks, for using of ATM withdrawals for more than certain limited withdrawal allowed, etc., etc. Right of appropriation of payments. When a customer owing two or more debts to the banker pays money which is not sufficient to discharging the debts, the question as to appropriation of payment arises. There is no clarity, so the banker will have a right based on certain decided case laws. One amongst them is the famous Clayton's rule. If the customer owes several debts to the banker and makes payment, he has the right to request the banker to apply the payment to the discharge of some particular debt. If the banker accepts the payment, he is bound by the appropriation as done by the customer. So if the customer gives some specific instruction, the banker has to comply with it. In the absence of any such direction from the customer, or the banker has the right to use the payment at his discretion, including the liquidation of a time-barred debt. However, where neither the customer nor the banker makes an appropriation, then such payment shall be applied in discharge of debts in the order of time they were incurred, and the money received will be applied towards the repayment of the first debt. So first in, first out. We have a very famous case of Devanish versus Noble, and which has to be known as, come to be known as famous, the Clayton's rule. With regard to a current account or a running account, if there has been no specific appropriation by a banker or the customer, it is held that receipts or income received would be utilized to reduce the first amount due. So the first amount due will be used to wipe out against the first credit that comes in. This was a decision arrived in the case of Devanish versus Noble and is known as the Clayton's rule. For example, let us assume Aditya's account is overdrawn by rupees 10,000. The account is credited by a check received from a customer of rupees 2,500, and on the same day there is a check payment of rupees 3,500. Now what happens based on the receipt of 2,500? Based on this rule, the original amount overdrawn, rupees 10,000, is reduced by 2,500 to reduce the original debt. Rupees 3,000 is a new debt. So what will happen if another check received of rupees 2,000, the original debt of rupees 10,000, which is 7,500, would be further reduced. So by which the liability will keep on going down by subsequent credits. The facts of the Devanish case was like this. Devanish was a senior partner of a firm of bankers. When he died, the other partners continued to carry on business under the same partnership of Devanish, Devs, Noble and Company, even though Devanish's son and the trustees of the late Mr. Devanish stated that the usage of the name was without their consent. The firm went bankrupt the next year and the partners were insolvent. Nathaniel Clayton represented, now this fellow on whose name the rule is named, Nathaniel Clayton represented those who continued to deal with the partners after Devanish's death, both by paying in and paying out. So the liability was receiving debits and credits in spite of the death of Devanish. Some withdrawals were made after the death of before the amounts were paid in. The balance on the whole increased. With regard to Clayton, he had a balance of 1,713 at the time of Devanish's death. This reduced to 453 within few days. Before the bankruptcy, withdrawals amounted to considerably more than 1,713. Clayton claimed 453 from Devanish's estate, arguing that subsequent withdrawals from the accounts were to be set off against the later credits. Sir William Grant, a judge who ruled the case, stated, "This is a case of banking account where all the sums paid in from one blended account, the parts of which have no longer any distinct existence. Neither banker nor customer ever thinks of saying this draft is to be placed in the account of 500 paid in on Monday and this order of 500 is on Tuesday. There is a fund of 1,000 to draw upon and that is enough. In such a case, there is no room for any other appropriation which arises from the order in which the receipt and payment takes place and are carried into the account. Presumably, it is a sum of first paid in, that is first drawn out, first in, first out basis. It is the first item on the debit side of the account that is discharged or reduced by the first item on the credit side. The rule in Clayton's case affects all current accounts, whether overdrawn or not. As far as the banker is concerned, he is only concerned about overdraft accounts to determine the liability of each party. Application of Clayton's rule to banking transactions. Nowadays, after realization from the Clayton's rule, what bankers are doing currently? Death or insolvency of a partner of a joint account. In case of death or insolvency, or in case of a death of a partner to be more specific, his estate is liable for the debts created before his death. If the overdraft or cash credit account of the firm is continued unbroken after the notice of the death, all the credits reduce the liability of the deceased estate, while fresh advances are the sole responsibility of the surviving partners by operation of the rule in the Clayton's rule. Determination of a guarantee by giving a notice in writing to the bank A guarantor may revoke a continuing guarantee as to future transactions. It can also be determined by the debt or insolvency of the guarantor. In any such situation, the borrower's account should be broken, or otherwise, the Clayton's rule will apply. Hence, it is very important that the borrower's account should be broken and a separate account should be opened in the name of existing partners. Otherwise, the Clayton's rule of first in, first out will apply. And all subsequent creditors will reduce the liability of the guarantor or his estate, while all payments out will constitute the new debts unsecured by the guarantee. Notice of second charge. When the charge banker receives a notice of second charge over the customer's properties, the account of such customers should be stopped to avoid the application of Clayton's rule. So here again, the account's operation should be stopped. A new account should be opened for all future transactions. If such arrangements are not done, then all subsequent accounts paid to the credit will reduce the account secured by first mortgage charge over the property. All withdrawals made after the notice will create the fresh debts ranking after write off second mortgage. And if we have to conclude the banker's right, what we can say is the role of a banker is one filled with multiple duties and responsibilities. It is not necessary that he just gives the services. He should be aware about the multiple roles and responsibilities, otherwise he can be held liable, booked for negligence. Banker's right to charge interest, commission, incidental charges, charges of service rendered and sold to a customer, etc., comes with the type of relationship entered into the customer. Bankers are also equipped with special rights like set off, general lien, etc., for smooth administration of banking business, and wherever required, the banker is supposed to execute it. At the same time, the banker is also needed to be aware about where such rights of general lien and set off cannot be executed. Overall, the duties, responsibilities, and rights of a banker are balanced to a larger extent, and that establishes a solid relationship. Neither the customer complains because the customer is very much aware about the bank's rights. At the same time, the banker is also aware about his obligations. That's the end of this chapter. Thank you very much.